Good morning and welcome to the March 22nd, 2011 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. If you would please join us in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So, good morning to all. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda, please.
The changes to today's agenda is we have one amended item to consent, A14, a submittal of a resolution approving amendments to the San Luis Obispo County Employees Retirement Plan, establishing a second-tier pension plan for SLOSIA represented employees in bargaining units 1, 5, and 13, hired on or after April 17, 2011, and a corresponding budget adjustment to the Memoranda of Understanding for those bargaining units. Staff is requesting this item be amended by replacing Attachment A, the amendment to the 2010-2013 SLOSIA Bargaining Units 1, 5, and 13 Memoranda of Understanding, to add an original SLOSIA signature, and at the SLOSIA's request, revise wording which includes the addition of an effective date of implementation of the Tier 2 plan. These modifications do not change the intent of the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. I also wanted to note that we are going to have one flip-flop in our agenda this morning. C2 will be heard last, which is the item on the groundwater management plan, and then the trails, which is D1, will be heard just before it. That's because our water specialist, Ms. Howard, I think she's currently pregnant and has an appointment. I guess I shouldn't say all this personal information, but just had to give a justification for why we're doing this. But we wanted to make sure that she'll get back in time from her doctor's appointment to give her presentation, so we're just flipping that. Shouldn't cause any problems. So, all right. What else? What else do we have to reveal about our staff this morning? All right, let's go into our consent agenda, and let's see if I can fish out any public comments that we might have since they're all over the place. A2, Mike Brown. A14, Tammy Douglas Schatz, please.
C2.
Mr. Brown.
Good morning, Supervisors, Mr. Chair. Mike Brown representing the San Luis Obispo County Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. We have no objection to this object per se. It appears to be a small line of credit to the Regional Transit Authority. It says to bridge some issues with federal and state revenues. In looking at their financials, we couldn't see any particular predicament there overall, but would like to point out that for 40, 50 years, there's been an awful lot of advocacy for mass transit. This morning, the Regional Transit Authority's bus 156, the one that was going from Santa Maria up here at TEF and 101, appeared to have one rider. And I think, and this is the rush hour, so this is emblematic of the situation, and we would just point out that in the bigger context of all the plans and so forth, mass transit is very expensive, very heavily subsidized, and it's something to think about. Thank you very much.
Mr. Greening, also on A2, I'm sorry, just came up, and then Ms. Douglas Schatz, and then Mr. Brown again on A14.
Eric Greening, and in response, yes, there are specific cash flow issues that will be there is nothing out of the ordinary about this. The county can have full confidence that the cash flow issues will be addressed. And relative to the expense of mass transit, there is a recent CalPERG study. I wish I had it with me so I could respond, but what's truly expensive and heavily, heavily subsidized is the single-occupant vehicle. The constant ongoing expansion of the road system to proliferate, to keep up with the proliferation of the single-occupant vehicle actually is not even remotely covered by gas taxes. It's not even remotely covered by vehicle license fees, which is why $1.3 billion out of every state budget for 30 years is going into repayment of bonds to largely for the purpose of continuing to enlarge the road system. Mass transit, even the best-run system, will sometimes have buses visible with one or few passengers. There are deadhead directions where a bus fills at one end, takes them to the other end, has to get back to fill again. I know that with rideshare and other groups, we're doing all the marketing we can to try to get full use of the spare capacity. Sometimes it needs to begin at a certain transfer point, and you know, even the best run system will have buses that are sometimes not full or far from full. But I can tell you as a rider that the usage is picking up, and with every uptick in the price of gasoline, most of which is going to oil companies, not taxes, every uptick in the price of gasoline, the use of the system is more robust. And every time you have a full bus, you have 40 cars off the road. So just to put it in perspective, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Douglas Schatz on A14, followed by Mr. Brown on A14.
Thank you, Chairman Hill, members of the board. Tammy Douglas Schatz, Human Resources. With the approval of this item, employees in the big unit of SLOCIA will join your board, department heads, management, and all unrepresented staff in the establishment of a second tier of retirement. I'd like to thank SLOCIA members for entering into this agreement and assisting the county with assuring the long-term sustainability of the pension plan. Specifically, once all employees under the current plan retire and all employees reside in a new second tier, the county will realize an annual savings of approximately $20 million. In addition, the second tier pension costs for both the county and employees will be cut in half. With approval of this item, the county now has a second retirement tier for units representing approximately 75% of employees. We look forward to continuing negotiations with the remaining bargaining units to successfully negotiate a second retirement benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. Mr. Brown?
Morning again. Mike Brown representing COLAB. We think this is a very positive step that you have achieved here, that it's a good thing. As your report points out, it doesn't necessarily have an immediate benefit because it will take a number of years for the current cohort in Tier 1 to go through, but it is a good step, and we hope that you achieve it for the other bargaining units. That being said, a note of caution, having lived with these in other jurisdictions, at a point, a growing number of your future employees will be in Tier 2, and they will be sitting next to the person in Tier 1, making the normal comparisons. And when they begin to reach around half the workforce and more, the pressure will come back for equity and equality, and some future board will be faced with that issue. So it's and you can argue it both ways, of course, but it does come back and sometimes cause friction. But we think that's a good step, and hope that more things are coming. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. We'll close it, the consent agenda, to public comment and bring it back to the board here and go to my colleagues for any questions or comments. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think A14 does deserve comment.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
A14.
Okay. Mr. Meacham?
Ditto.
And Mr. Teixeira?
This time, thank you.
Okay. We'll start down where we started. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think all of us realize this is a tremendously significant step. It may seem on one level rather a small detail, but to the folks who are involved, I know it's not. And I would like to thank SLOSIA for their understanding, thank staff for their work in negotiating this. I think I would just observe that this is a constructive reaction to a new reality, and I applaud those who engaged in this discussion that got us where we are today. The stability of this jurisdiction's ability to provide service is much enhanced by this, even as we know that it changes the landscape quite a lot. So my thanks to all involved, and we will look forward to finishing negotiations with the other bargaining units.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply want to thank SLOSIA and the county employees that SLOSIA represents for taking this positive step forward. As Supervisor Gibson said, it is the new reality, and it's something that we're all facing in public service, and I'm glad that we're at the forefront of this effort and making this change. So, again, thank you.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to be too redundant here, but I do also appreciate the willingness of the employees to recognize the long-term necessity of addressing this concern. And I appreciate my colleagues willing to, in lockstep, take a look at how we can address the issue of the long-term financial stability of this county, and I think that's what our charge is. So I, too, greatly appreciate all of our employees working with us to try to come to some type of an agreement to establish that stability.
Thank you. And I would concur with all three of the comments made by my colleagues in terms of being grateful to SLOSIA for moving forward on this important part of our compensation reform. We have a lot still to do. It's been difficult, but I think it's definitely a sign of the kind of employees that we have in our county. I know it's a time when it's fashionable to beat up public employees in the public realm and to demonize unions, but I think that for our purposes, as we have asked our employees and our bargaining units to be part of the solution, to be part of helping us move forward to a sustainable economic future, we have seen them step up. And I think that's important to recognize in our community, so I thank them. And with that, I'd call for a motion to
move consent calendar.
I'll second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Meacham, seconded by Mr. Patterson. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay, thank you. We're going to move on to our presentations.
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All right, thank you. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Meacham. Roll call for approval on presentations, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Oh, yes. Okay, we're going to begin, and I'm going to read the first one. It's a resolution recognizing Jack O'Connell, who most of us know here, a local resident and has been an elected official in a variety of – so I'll read this. And I just want to say before I read this, this is a pleasure for me to do so. Jack's been a role model in many ways for myself and for others as an incredibly hardworking public servant – someone who taught all of us the importance of walking precincts, of being in people's neighborhoods, of being accessible to the electorate, how important, how that never goes out of style and never is less than incredibly effective, and also has always shown himself to be somebody willing to work across the aisle. Different times in Sacramento when Jack was in the Senate and the Assembly, but he was always well regarded here for his leadership and certainly for his sense of humor. So it's a pleasure, and we'll read this, and before we let him, we'll have him accept it. But before we have him speak, we'll call on some of his special friends to perhaps share a bit about Jack with us. So this resolution recognizing Jack O'Connell for 28 years of dedication to public service, and particularly in education. Whereas Jack O'Connell began his career as a high school teacher in Oxnard and was on the Board of Education for Santa Barbara County before being elected to the State Assembly representing the Central Coast in 1982. After 12 years in the Assembly, Jack was elected to the State Senate and held that office from 1994 through 2002. Whereas in 2002, Jack was elected to the office of State Superintendent of Public Instruction, serving for 8 years, during which Jack provided leadership with his skills, values, diligence, and unerring dedication to improving the state's public school system. And whereas amongst his accomplishments, Jack successfully passed Proposition 39, the ballot initiative to lower the threshold for passing school bonds for construction. And whereas Jack has earned the trust and admiration and respect of the community which he has served, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Jack O'Connell for 28 years of dedication to public service and education and express sincere appreciation and deep gratitude to Jack O'Connell for his efforts to improve California public education. Jack, would you come up and...
Get one picture here with the board, Jack. I think Susan's got a...
Yeah. All right, he's too tall, so I'll have to lean over this way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we let you speak, though, Jack, and we will, I would like to have a few people come up. I see our superintendent, Julian Crocker. I know we have... Tom Jones, a former staff member of yours here, Don Ernst, a friend, and then we'll let others perhaps in the spirit of goodwill.
Thank you. I would like
Dr.
to ask,
Crocker.
Ask Dr. Eric Prater, who's superintendent of San Luis Coastal, perhaps join me up here very
okay,
quickly.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yes, and just to give a little local flavor to mm-hmm. what you had said in terms of the resolution, it's certainly well-deserved. Jack, of course, has been a member of this community for over 30 years, and in terms of representing us in both the Assembly as well as the Senate, and then, as you said, of course, most recently as our state superintendent. Just to put some numbers together, the last primary election that Jack ran in, he had 2 million votes. I think that was the largest number of votes at that particular time of any elected official in the United States, not just California, but the United States. And again, a couple of local perspectives. I think Jack's major accomplishments, the thing that he is most proud of, is the Prop 39, the bond measure. And just to remind you, Frank and I know quite well, we went through three very brutal bond campaigns in Paso Robles. Before that passed, we got well over 60% of the votes. It did not pass because of the two-thirds requirement. Just recently, this last fall in Atascadero, they also got about 63%, and it passed because of the 55%, which means the youngsters in Atascadero now will have over $100 million in bond measure that will help with their facilities, remodeling, renovation of the schools in Atascadero. Yesterday, I happened to be sitting again in Atascadero with a kindergarten teacher who was telling me the very, very difficult situation that she faces because she now has 35 students in her classes. Before that, of course, because of class size reduction, again, bill championed and passed by Jack, she had 20. Well, the difference is I think, pretty evident. And again, it's a very local situation of the effect that Jack has had. The last thing I would say is that Jack was very courageous, in my point of view, and very early in his tenure as state superintendent, pointing out the achievement gap in our state. We like to talk about the good things, but Jack was not at all bashful about saying we have an achievement gap in students who are in poverty, students with disabilities, students in our Latino, Hispanic community, English language learners are not achieving to the degree that other students are. It's not a popular thing to say. Jack was very courageous in pointing that out, and over his term as state superintendent, we did make very, very steady improvement. So on behalf, I think, of all of the students in the state of California, but particularly the 35,000 students here in this county, I want to thank Jack very much for your service over the years to our students and our schools. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Dr. Crocker. Mr. Prater?
Well, I really appreciate that you are acknowledging Jack O'Connell. I can speak from a unique perspective as both a superintendent and a site principal. I benefited from his lone voice in many respects, while people challenge the notion that all kids can learn and all means all. Jack, as state superintendent of schools, was that voice. He was undeterred in his commitment to all means all, and he meant that by way of accountability, by way of challenging public educators to step up despite the challenges both economically and instructionally. And he led a tremendous movement in advocating for middle grades education. I benefited from that with my staff. And then later on down the road, I benefited from the Prop 39 movement as we in the Bay Area. I helped facilitate the construction of new schools and new facilities for kids. So I guess my message to Jack and my acknowledgement to him is that he served as a beacon of sorts for site leadership. And I used his commitment and his words to motivate my staff and my community, and for that I'm very thankful.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, a former staffer of Jack's.
Thank you, Chairman Hill, members of the board. Jack, through his tenure in the legislature, had well over 100 staffers, and we all describe ourselves the same way, is nearly fully recovered from his energy and the public service and the demands that he was able to meet head-on through a very large district that basically ran from the bridge in Ventura all the way up to the Monterey County line. Quite a haul up the 101. He could tell you at the time the Santa Maria Bridge has 30 expansion joints. We went up and down the freeway so many times. So during that tenure, I had the fortune to work for him for 7 years. And simply put, his dedication to public service and public education was unwavering. The card table was legendary. I can't tell you how hard it is to get something so thin in a car, but he's able to do it. And with that came his focus to constituent service. He never lost sight of that. We did over 3,500 cases a year out of the San Luis office alone, about 7,000 a year through his three offices. And with that, there was the big ticket items. He built three colleges because of Jack. Three colleges in Ventura, Lompoc, and up in Paso Robles. But also it was the little cases that were really touching. And the one that comes to mind is Frank Lowatsky down in Napomo. He was his home was built on an abandoned petroleum site. There was some toxic concerns. There was no state programs to fix it. So Jack took a chunk of oil and put it on his desk and said, Mr. Lowatsky, that's here until I fix it. It took him 5 years, two governors, and five budgets, but he got it done. And I remember when we took the darn tar off the desk, it ruined the desk and took the finish off, but that was okay. So then we had a clean spot that represented that neighborhood. So through all the years, that was probably the one that still sticks with me, those individual faces that I can still see that first came up with, frankly, no hope at that card table and left with a new neighborhood. So, Jack, on behalf of all those folks, I just wanted to thank you very much.
Don Ernst.
Good morning. My name is Don Ernst, and I've known Jack O'Connell since the mid-80s. I had the pleasure of meeting Jack when he was an assembly person in Sacramento. And as I got to know Jack, you realize that while he was our local assembly person and state senator, he was a force in Sacramento. And everything that Tom Jones said about how he took care of his local constituents, from the card table at the local library, we all remember that. There was access. Everyone had access. He cared about the regular people and his constituents. More importantly, I had the pleasure of being in Sacramento over the years when he was in the state Senate as well as the Assembly. And I saw the force that he was in Sacramento. And when I say a force in Sacramento, we viewed him as our local representative. But I can assure you, he was a force in Sacramento. And we got a little bit of that when Highway 46 was an issue. There were a number of deaths. Within weeks, there were improvements made to Highway 46. And now we see a lot of the results of the work that Jack O'Connell began way back when he was state senator. Highway 46 is safer for all of us, and I can assure you that we owe a debt of gratitude from all of us as citizens. That force that he had as a state senator carried him to the state superintendent of public instruction. You need to sit back and look for a moment at how hard it is for a person in the central coast of California to reach statewide office. He's not from Los Angeles. He's not from San Francisco. There is not the huge economic base from which to draw that you can retain statewide office. Jack O'Connell did that, and he did that because of his absolute force for public service. I can't tell you around the state the respect that Jack O'Connell has garnered, not only as a legislator, but as the state superintendent of public instruction. Jack O'Connell made a difference for the education of our children. He made a personal change in how the public affords schools for their children. He's part of the future that we have in the state of California. And the fact that he sponsored, supported, and was able to bring the 55% approval rate for those school bonds is an incredibly important legacy that will inure to the benefit of all Californians. The achievement gap was spoken of, and I can just tell you, across the state, people recognize what Jack O'Connell did in the face of the budgetary restraints. I'm being pretty serious here. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's my dear friend. But I've got to tell you, in light of the honor that you're bestowing upon him, you need to know that Jack O'Connell was not only a force for the people locally, but across the state of California. And we were extraordinarily lucky to have him. And I'm honored to be his friend, and I'm honored that he is receiving this today. Thanks, Jack.
Betsy Elmhofer from Congresswoman Capps' office, if you would.
I'm here today on behalf of Congresswoman Lois Capps, and I am honored to present on this occasion an entry into the congressional record on behalf of Jack O'Connell. This is the way it will be read. Mr. Speaker, today I rise to honor and celebrate a dedicated public servant and my dear friend, State Superintendent Jack O'Connell. Jack's outstanding service to California as the State Superintendent of Public Instruction for the past 8 years will be felt for decades to come. Drawing upon his long career of distinguished public service, Jack's leadership has helped prepare generations of students to compete in a rapidly evolving global economy. His tireless efforts have succeeded in closing achievement gaps and raising student test scores 8 years in a row in almost every grade and subject area. As the author of the legislation creating the California High School Exit Exam, Jack has helped solidify California's world-class academic excellence by increasing rigor and improving student achievement. Jack O'Connell's remarkable career spans 28 years of public service. Prior to his work as the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, he was elected to the 35th State Assembly District and the 18th State Senate District, both for 2 terms. As a former high school teacher and member of the Santa Barbara County School Board, Jack has used his expertise and experience to serve our community for decades. Not only do Jack's accomplishments measure tall, but his character is a true example of public service. He knows the value of working hard and bringing people together to build coalitions to pass important initiatives for our communities. Politicians from both sides of the aisle respect his knowledge, his decency, and his dedication to public service. Jack and his wife, Dory, have been wonderful friends over the years, always opening their hearts in their home. I will always be grateful for their guidance and unconditional friendship, both to me and my late husband, Walter. From education forums to Chicago concerts, I also cherish our countless memories. I am honored to have worked with both of them and proud to have called them my friends. Lois Capps, Member of Congress.
Mr. Bordenaro, perhaps you can give us some comments about the force that Jack was when he was in Sacramento that Mr. Ernst spoke of, and then we'll have a few of our school members, Mark Buckman, Kayla Plorda, as well after.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. How's that? Is it working?
Yeah.
Great. Finally. appreciate the time that you've taken to honor my friend Jack O'Connell. In 1994, I ran for assembly when Jack was running for state senate. I had had zero political experience.
Tom, apparently it's not on.
Are they still?
Face of the mic.
Yes.
Hello.
Is there a switch at the base?
One of those new ones, right?
Yeah.
New and improved.
New and improved. So good you can't hear it.
Maybe that was by design. How's that? How about no?
Well, we can hear you, but.
Speak like you did on the floor of the assembly, Tom.
Yeah. Okay. Here, pull out that chair over there. I'll still look at the desk. Right.
You what?
Right.
It's on the base. Is the Susan? If you want to, it's on the base of
that
the.
One's working. There now, I feel.
Yeah,
like
that the one's working at the desk. If you want, Tom.
Okay.
How about this?
That's perfect.
Okay. Now I feel like Phil Donahue. I start over? No. I just want to take a few minutes. One of the things, and for those of you who've run in partisan races before, there's probably not that many in this room, but they are very partisan. And campaigns become sometimes, I would say a little bit ugly, but they're very partisan, and you think that your way is the right way and the other way is the wrong way, and there's all kinds of forums that Jack and I attended, and although we never were on opposite sides of the microphone, many times we are on opposite sides of the issues. But then we went to Sacramento, and then it was time to govern. And I quickly learned that around 95 to 98% of the things that we do, that we did in Sacramento, were nonpartisan. And Jack and I worked together, representing this district, I think, in a manner which many in Sacramento should take lesson from today, whether it was the California Earthquake Authority or fixing Highway 46. You know, when Jack would hit him from the left and I could hit him from the right, they didn't know what the hell happened. And we were able to do the job and get the job done. And I really do believe that those that are in Sacramento now should take lesson from that, because much of what is done on a nonpartisan basis. And Jack was always a true gentleman. He represented his district quite well. I think, you know, I remember when we had forums with Chuck Quackenbush with the California Earthquake Authority. People say, why are you guys having forums together? I said, well, because we have a district that we share, and it's in the best interest of the district. And I think that's a lesson that I took from Jack is, first thing is your district, take care of your district, and people will respect you for that. So thank you, Jack, for serving. Thank you for being a friend. And thank you for honoring him today.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, two more tributes, and then we have more people to honor as well. Mark Buckman and then Caleb Lord after that, please.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure, I guess, to represent all the school board members in San Luis Obispo County. Jack served on several years as a school board member. Mark Twain said that God invented fools and then the next day invented school board members. I guess then he invented assemblymen and on up. No offense. Jack's also a guy that never missed an opportunity to come speak. I've heard him speak at the Tri-County Education Coalition, at the California School Employees Association, at PTA locally, and his door was always open to us locally and as state organizations. But there's one thing that I really did learn from Jack that's been important to me over the years. There was a time Jack flew local planes, and we had local planes going up to Sacramento, and I got to sit next to him one time and learned that there's two seats on the plane with a lot of legroom. Now, Jack's a little taller than I am. But I always ask for those seats because they had lots of legroom near the emergency. So, Jack, congratulations on behalf of everybody.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Caleb Lord on behalf of the California State PTA legislation team. I want to say a thank you to Jack for believing and pushing for parent involvement, thinking that, recognizing that it is one of the keys to the well-being of the children in our state, and for recognizing that every child, every single child in this state and in this country deserves an opportunity to succeed. Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd only observe on the subject of being an elected official and getting elected. It was in the late 80s when I moved to this county, and Mr. O'Connell was well past halfway in his term in the assembly, and indeed the legendary card table was out in one of the first elections that I voted in, having returned to California. Now, I didn't meet Assemblyman O'Connell at that point. In fact, it was probably 10 more years before we actually shook hands, and 5 more before I considered running for office. But I saw in an assemblyman who would sit at a card table on, let's call it as the current vernacular would be, a random street corner or in front of a library, a remarkable individual. To hear him then speak, to watch him govern, truly a remarkable individual, because he spoke with substance and passion and great concern for the people he represented. I think I internalized at that point that this was a model for elected service, and in particularly a model for how to campaign, that you can campaign on the issues, that you can be a decent and sincere and committed elected official, and it informs very much my vision of what an elected official should be. So I thank you for that, Jack, and appreciate it.
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What hasn't been said multiple times about Jack O'Connell, speaking personally, he's been an inspiration to me as an elected official because of his accessibility and his commitment to representing his constituents. And they don't always do that, and he does. And most importantly, though, I think Jack's legacy will be returning majority rule to the people of California who want to improve their schools through Prop 39. And that's done more and will continue to do more for education in California, and Jack is responsible for bringing that forward. And so I thank you for that, Jack.
Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The card table. It was an amazing thing to see outside of our library in Paso Robles. Jack set up the card table. I'll never forget, my wife one day said, I have an issue that I would like to present to the state. I said, well, why don't you walk down to the park and talk to that guy that's standing there in the card table. I said, he'll listen to you. She did. Came back to the house. She said, I'll vote for that guy no matter what he does. He got right back to me and responded to my concern. And the second thing that I wanted to comment on, and I think it should be mentioned, in regard to the educational things that Jack has accomplished with the Cuesta College in the North County. But there was somebody else that, and he's here today, and it was part of the family that was responsible for that college being built. We lost him a couple weeks ago, and that was Mr. Gene Ernst, that donated $1 million to Cuesta College to get that college going. And with the help of Jack and others like that in that community, we now have a very successful North County campus. So my hat's off to you, sir, and you look awfully relieved now.
Well, as I said before, he's been a role model for me. When I was running for office a few years ago, there was a trailer park, gated trailer park, and I had been on that obsession to meet every voter you possibly can, and so I wanted to get into this trailer park regardless of the fact that it was locked. And when I got in and went to somebody's house, the guy said, "How the heck did you get in here?" And I didn't want to tell him. I said, "Well, somebody let me in." He goes, "I haven't seen anybody in here since Jack O'Connell." And then I talked to Tom Jones, and he said, "Oh, yeah, you got to boost over the dumpsters, and then you get in that way." So, people always will have an appreciation of their electeds who sincerely mean to hear what they have to say and to do everything it takes to make themselves accessible. And Jack has really shown that example here as well as anybody could have. So it's our pleasure, Jack. Thank you, and we wish you. We know you're going to be up in Sacramento again, but hopefully back down here as much as possible, watching Laker games with friends and all that. So we wish you and Dory great luck.
Didn't let him talk?
And now we let him talk, I guess. Well, that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This three here means 3 hours.
Yes, 3 hours.
I thought I was in Cuba or something. Thank you very, very much for this real honor. This is a real highlight for me and for so many friends that came out, and I didn't call or invite one of them. As I was walking over here, I parked over in Don's a lot and walked down. I remember 1993 when I announced for the state senate in this county. You ever throw a press conference and have nobody show up? I mean, and then they said, "Well, invite all of your friends." And we could have met in a telephone booth to get started. And then we took a poll and realized I wasn't known outside my cul-de-sac, up here. So that was come a long way. But this is very, very nice. And I sincerely want to thank you. You have a busy agenda, I know, awesome responsibilities, and a really tough job. And so thank you for taking a few minutes like this. It means a great deal. And I think the highlight for me in working both in the legislature for 20 years with so many good friends and so many good people, and so you've heard from many of them. Is Tom still here? I've never had a good staff, though. That was the one weakness with the I'm always having to tell them what they really meant when they returned the calls. But people in Sacramento knew that as state superintendent, and Julie will tell you this, if you received a phone call from me and you were superintendent or principal, you were a California Distinguished School. If you received a telephone call from my staff, it was good luck on the audit. It was that kind of approach. But I think the highlight for me, both in the legislature and the state superintendent, was working with elected officials and working with community leaders and working with people who had good ideas that you could implement. Assemblyman Bordenar was absolutely correct that we were able to really tag team in the legislature. It was dominated by majority Democrats, both houses, and I could, for the most part, get bills through. And then we needed Governor Wilson. And I can't tell you how many times I'd be calling Tom and asking for help, in the governor's office, or vice versa. Tom saying, "I have a bill, stuck in committee. I'm going to need one Democrat to vote for it. Can you go work?" And it was in our community's best interest. One of my favorite stories, and I'd never be one to tell the same joke twice, but on Highway 46, I had heard that Assemblyman Bardinaro, and we've been working on a lot of issues together. I heard he wanted to name something after me that we'd been working on. And we'd also been working on water quality issues for the Casmalia toxic dump. And Tom and I used to accuse each other at times of being somewhat dyslexic. And so I figured he'd name the dump not O'Connell Dump, it'd be Dump O'Connell. And then, I find out it's the Highway 46. Well, the one thing I don't think I ever told you, Tom, is the first week they erected the sign, we had three friends call Dory and say they were sorry to have learned of Jack's passing. So Dory said, well, he usually doesn't drive very fast. Did he pass your car or something? And, you know, and they would say no. But it was really a highlight to be able to work with so many good friends and colleagues. And here locally in particular, not just the highway and not just the college up in the then Mayor Meacham was very helpful and instrumental with that. And to get Don's dad involved in that, really, it was a Sunday afternoon at a swimming pool up near where Don lives. And I said, I have to fly to Sacramento a little early. I'm lucky I had a friend with an airplane. And it was to start lining up votes for this budget augmentation to purchase that land for the Cuesta North County campus. And that really piqued Mr. Ernst's interest at that time. Little did I know, and it wasn't my intent, that he was going to become really one of the major driving forces in bringing higher educational opportunities to the North County, along with people like Frank jumping in. Involved. But when I think of some of our efforts and working with Tom to preserve open space, the East-West Ranch up along the coast and Irish Hills, and Tom Jones mentioned in the Pomo area with the cleanup, the call boxes that we were able to obtain for the county as well, it really was a very good run and something I'm very proud of. And then lastly, as state superintendent, I'm most proud of the fact that even during these very difficult budgetary times, and I think Julian referenced it, test scores are up in California 8 years in a row. And as state superintendent, I take full credit for it. And we were able to challenge the education community to help us narrow the achievement gap. And I think Don Ernst very eloquently, as well as Julian, articulated what tremendous challenges that presents to us. And yet those are the subgroups growing the fastest. And if we're going to have that well-trained, well-educated, analytical workforce, that workforce has to come from these subgroups. And so that's why we have to, we're on the right track, now we have to be on the fast track to help narrow that achievement gap as well. And then the buildings that we've been able to do, the Proposition 39 to spearhead with the education community, the real estate community was great, the business community, and we wouldn't have done it without the Silicon Valley. They recognize the importance of having that well-educated workforce. And the class size reduction, that was one where I had to call Tom. I said, please get Governor Wilson involved. And he was heroic and Herculean in helping us come up with the funding for that major legislative initiative as well. So very, very appreciative for that. And then finally, all of our efforts on career technical education. If you remember just one number from me today, 8 years ago in the state of California, we had in the entire state 288 career tech classes that were accepted by UC and CSU. We now are at 8,000. And we did that not by lowering the standards for UC and CSU. We did it by increasing the rigor and the relevance of those classes so that we'll have people better prepared for jobs in this hyper-competitive global economy. So this is a real honor. I'm not sure what's more important to Congresswoman Lois Capps and being here today, but I'll find out. I'm kidding. Tell Lois, okay. I've never been in the congressional record before. I hope that doesn't mean a federal income tax hike or something for the O'Connell family. But we're so fortunate to have a truly great legacy that the Capps family has really put forth to represent us in Washington. I haven't been in Washington, D.C. since last week, and you talk about a person with real influence back there. There are a few people that are go-to people in Washington. Lois Capps is one of them. So thank you very, very much for having me here. A real honor, real highlight for me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you to Supervisor Meacham for mentioning the great efforts of Gene Ernst, a wonderful citizen of our county, well-known in Paso, who we sadly lost recently. So I think there was good tribute to that as well. So moving on to our next presentation, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a resolution declaring April of this year as Autism Awareness Month in the county. And I apologize for not knowing who's here to accept the resolution. Please do come and introduce yourself at this point, and I'll read the resolution, and we'll give you comments in a minute here.
Thank you. My name is Steve Lum, and I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center.
And?
My name is Julie Miller. I'm the Executive Director for the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center.
Thank you very much. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas autism is a complex neurobiological disorder that typically lasts throughout a person's lifetime, it is part of a group of disorders known as autism spectrum disorders, or ASDs. And whereas the incidence of autism in San Luis Obispo County reflects the national rate of 1 in 110, with rates appearing to have increased similarly around the globe. And whereas parents and family members have made invaluable contributions through their commitment, caring, and advocacy to important advances in research, education, and treatment for individuals with ASDs. And whereas Autism Awareness Month and the Walk for Autism and Autism Awareness Fair help to increase and develop knowledge of autism and are of paramount importance in creating an empathetic and compassionate citizenry. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby declare April 2011 as Autism Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County and recognizes that each and every individual with an ASD is a valued and important member of our society with unique talents, abilities, and contributions, and commends the parents and relatives of individuals with ASDs, the professionals that provide valued services, and the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center for their sacrifice and dedication in providing for the special needs of individuals with ASDs.
I would like to thank the Council for the proclamation and support. We enjoy community support for our walk, which is scheduled for April 3rd. We will have over 1,000 people from the county participating with 20 to 30 vendors connecting with people to get help and support. The primary beneficiary of our walk is a camp that we have in August for kids who are on the Autism Spectrum Center. 30 to 50 kids will enjoy 2 weeks of camp, and more importantly, their families will enjoy a break. Other events that we sponsor are an Arts for Autism event recently held at Cal Poly. We provide police and responder training. We work with Cal Poly in training future special education teachers, and we provide parent support groups. As a grandparent with a grandson with autism, I personally thank you for your support.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate where we were placed on the agenda, because some of the people in this room have some personal connections to autism, some professional connections to autism, and it was an amazing group of people demonstrating how important it is for everybody to come together across aisles and work towards the benefit of our most vulnerable citizens. I heard a lot in the comments made for Mr. O'Connell about the achievement gap. And I was sitting back there sort of biting my knuckles saying, I have some ideas. Call me. We do have a lot of work to do to help individuals with autism spectrum disorders and highlighting their unique abilities, making sure that they have a place in our society, because those 1 in 110 children, that's where our numbers are at right now, they grow up into adults, and they become part of the world that we all live in, and they do have a very wonderful and amazing set of unique abilities. And thank you so much for recognizing April as Autism Awareness Month. I really encourage you all to come out for the walk. It's an absolutely fantastic flashpoint event, show of support for the families that live here on the Central Coast. We have families coming from Washington, all over Northern California, all the way on down to SoCal. It's a very exciting event. It's a lot of fun, very family friendly, and I would love to have you guys there. So please bring your families. Come on down. Thanks again very much for your support.
Thank you.
Certainly. Thanks.
Thank you so much for all you do. And hopefully if people want to take part in that walk, they will, and I know that there's more information available, and we'll be happy to make it clear to you. And we have one more presentation, which is honoring some of our longstanding fine employees, Ms. Douglas Schatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Tammy Douglas Schatz, Human Resources, and here with me today is Robin Mason and Dory Duke. We are happy to be here to assist the board in your tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. Individuals recognized by the board are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. Today we have four awards for 25 years of service and one for 35 years of service. So we'll do the 25 years of service first. When we call your name, if you'll come up and get your award, and then you can approach the board and we'll have a photo, and then the department head may have a few comments to make. So without further ado, let's start out by honoring Julianne Anderson of the Office of the Auditor Controller.
Well, I'm Jim Erb. I'm the Assistant Auditor Controller. Jerry Seabach is out of town this week. He's at a training seminar. I've known Julie for quite a while. She started with the county in 1985 in the Public Works Department, and in 1987 she transferred to the Auditor's Office as an Accountant Auditor 1. She worked in the audit section for a couple of years and then very quickly realized she had a desire and an aptitude to work with accounting systems. She moved to our Accounting Systems Division, and she's worked there ever since. She's currently a principal auditor analyst and leads up the payroll division and supervises about six people. Since Julie's worked in the auditor's office, she's obtained her CPA license and she's got an MBA from Cal Poly. Julie is the person behind the scenes who has supported our payroll system. Everybody in the county who's been paid accurately and on time, and that's about 99.9%, should be thanking Julie for the service that she's done. I personally got to know Julie well during our SAP EFS implementation. Julie led up the HR payroll sections of that project. She configured our current timesheets and our current what we call employee self-service, the portal that where we go to input our time. Technology changes at an alarming rate, and so do labor agreements and state and federal regulations, and I'm just amazed at how Julie can stay on top of those changes, understand the laws, and adapt as quickly as she does. Julie's become such an expert in the field that SAP has used her to test new software releases and new ideas that they have. Okay, we all congratulate you, Julie, on your 25 years. Thanks.
So next we'd like to honor Connie Booten. Do you want to do one picture? Okay, great. Sorry about that. Okay. Yeah, help them get over to the side.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.
Okay, next.
Okay, next. Also from the Office of the Auditor Controller, Connie Booten. Is Connie here? Yes.
I think you're supposed to shake everybody's hand.
After.
After.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, wants to hear what
I read the note.
Yeah.
She's doing
Yeah.
She tells me what to do. Jim Erb, Assistant Auditor Controller. Polanyi's worked in the auditor's office for 25 years, but she actually started with the county in 1970. I don't think we have records that go back that far. She worked for 5 years for the county and then took some time off to have raise a couple children. She came back in 1985 and worked in the auditor's office as a data entry operator. And Connie and two other staff people, they did all the input for our accounting, payroll, and property tax system. Everything went through their fingers. And they were quick and they were accurate. And that went to about the year 2002, and Connie developed an interest in accounting systems, and she went back to Cuesta and took some classes and very quickly became our desktop support person in the auditor's office. She's the go-to person now. She spends a lot of her time in Jerry Seabock's office helping him log on and remember his password. But she's in my office, too. Connie's one of my favorite people in the county. She's easygoing, friendly, and has a really pleasant smile. She has many interesting hobbies and stories, and she is involved in the local blues society. She goes to music festivals and recently took a cruise that was blues music-oriented. I always enjoy visiting with Connie. Connie, congratulations on your 25 years.
Thank you. I really enjoyed working for the auditor's office for all these years, and they're not going to be rid of me yet.
Good.
Thank you.
At least not until Jerry learns how to log on.
Yes. You got job security, Connie. I tell you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Don't let her get away. The least exciting part.
Yeah.
You guys are the ones that make us look good.
We're sorry about the backdrop.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're moving on.
All right. Next, we'd like to honor Charles Sechrist from the Office of the Assessor.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We can do the photo now while we're here.
Do the photo now while you're here?
This is the individual.
Okay, then.
Apparently.
Well, thank you. When you announced Charles Sechrist, I didn't know who you were talking about. Because we call Charles J. Don't know why Charles doesn't like to be called Charles, but we call him Jay. So Jay was hired in the assessor's office as an appraiser aide back in January of 1986. And he's worked his way up through the appraiser career series and has become appraiser 3 and has been one since 2002. He has experience appraising various types of properties, including residential, commercial, and possessory interests. He's currently assigned to a standards section in our office and is responsible for staff training programs, writing office procedures and policies, coordinating assessment appeals functions within the office and with the clerk recorder, as Katrina knows, and the auditor staff. Over the years, Jay has contributed to the office by participating in a lot of different in various committees, working towards improving of our office structure and morale, which includes a staff organizational structure committee, the office Christmas committee. By the way, Jay never misses a party. I think that's why he was on the office Christmas committee so many years. But he also served when we had our earthquake in the North County. He was kind of a team leader on the earthquake response team, as we call it, aiding homeowners in their disaster relief efforts, and appreciate those efforts. Was something that kind of Jay jumped into and did a phenomenal job. He is a keystone that we do depend on. He's willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done, no matter what job it may be. Never complains. Well, at least he never complains to me. I don't know. He may complain. Sherry, does he complain at home? Okay. He always has a positive attitude, displays a great deal of flexibility. Where others see problems and challenges, Jay does see opportunities and new solutions. He's always looking for ways to improve our office. He is a very caring person, willing to help others. He is a county employee that is dedicated to serving the public. In his spare time, he's also been a member of the Tuscarora Parks and Rec Commission for several years. I know he's instrumental in building the youth center up there, and I know the city of Tuscarora appreciates that. His wife, Sherry, is here today. They have three daughters. But one thing that, people in the assessor's office know, he doesn't necessarily look like it, but this guy taught John Travolta how to dance. He is the most amazing dancer. When he busts a move out on the dance floor, we all know that it's time to party. So, Jay, thank you for that visual and those lessons, those dance lessons, we appreciate very much. But mostly we appreciate your dedication to the public in the assessor's office. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, let's see the moves there,
brother.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
the moves.
You gotta get. Well,
I'm not sure you want to see
them. We'll do the best we can.
Thank you. Okay,
and
on.
Also from the assessor's office, Stephen Wolfinger.
You know, I think it's funny that HR sends out what we're supposed to do every time we have these awards. And I thought I actually read it, but apparently I didn't. Well, it's a pleasure to be here to honor Steve. Steve actually had a schooling of forestry and surveying. And if you knew him when he first came to work, you'd have thought he was Grizzly Adams. And I think that's why he was probably in mapping. And that's where he started off, in our office, was with mapping. We first started off in New York, a native of the Northeast, came to California. And we're lucky that he did, because we ended up hiring him here in this county. And as a mapper, he quickly moved up and supervised our mapping section for quite some time. Steve is now a manager in our office. He manages the mapping section. And he manages our automation crew, keeps us running. And by the way, just for the record, I do know how to log into my computer. But they're also all in my room quite often because I think I have a little bit too much, enough knowledge to make myself dangerous. Steve, now, some would say he's the luckiest employee in the assessor's office because he's only had one supervisor, and that's Kirk Kidwell. Of course, I think it's only Kirk that says he's the luckiest. most of us feel sorry for Steve for only having one supervisor. But he's received many accolades throughout the years. He's been our Employee of the Month several times, Employee of the Year. In 1995, he's been the president of the California Cadastral Mappers Association. He's been very active in that organization. Moving forward and helping others assessors' offices move into the 21st century in mapping. He's been instrumental in moving our mapping process from cadastral mapping into the GIS world. He very quickly moved up the ranks and was identified as a leader and has done a heck of a job in the assessor's office. He and his wife, Jan, are avid outdoors people. They love traveling with their family of four-legged friends, their dogs. They hike, they camp, they kayak, they fish, they sightsee, they just plain get in their RV and take off and enjoy being in those outdoors. But the one thing that Steve enjoys the most is September 19th, which, for those of you who don't know, I do believe it's September 19th, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, which is Talk Like a Pirate's Day. So if you... If any of you are in the assessor's office on September 19th, you got to go see Steve. And in fact, I think, Desiree, are you here?
Yes.
Desiree is our mapping supervisor, and when Steve was interviewing her for the job, I believe it was September 19th, and she's pretty much the only one that got through the interview, because there was a portion of the interview where talking like a pirate was essential.
She did well.
She did well, did she not? So, with that great sense of humor, we appreciate everything that he's done for the county, for the people of this county, and for our office. Thank you, Steve, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We've got one more photo with for our next. Thank you, Steve. And Ms. Douglas Schatz, one more.
Yes, one more. For 35 years of service, we'd like to honor Dennis Philman of the Parks Department in GSA.
He doesn't seem very popular. Oh, we have a resolution.
Let's do our part, Mr. Chairman.
If you would,
doesn't he get something first? Yeah, right.
No, we just give him a resolution. He got a standing ovation. What else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a longtime friend of Mr. Philbin's, it gives me great pleasure to read this resolution upon his retirement. For 35 years of dedicated service to county residents and parks, recreation, open space, and trails. Whereas Dennis Philbin, a San Luis Obispo County native, graduated from Cal Poly State University in 1975 and began his career with the County of San Luis Obispo as a page in the library. Not a sentence, not a paragraph, but a page. And I guess the book is coming. In 1977, he transferred to County Parks as a gate attendant. Dennis showed great ability and was repeatedly promoted to Ranger 3. Guess it didn't stick the first few times? In March of 1985, he was promoted to the position of park superintendent, where he has continued to serve until his planned retirement, appropriately on April 1st, 2011. Whereas the hallmarks of his career are his affable nature, extraordinary service, sense of humor, attention to detail, dedication and willingness to serve the citizens and visitors of San Luis Obispo County, and whereas throughout Dennis Philbin's outstanding career, he has been recognized for his commitment to safety awareness, including his service as a member and chair of the County's Safety Commission for over 20 years, where his dedication to safety resulted in the installation of AEDs in departments throughout the county, benefiting citizens and coworkers alike. And whereas Dennis Philbin will be remembered as an exemplary public employee, leader and innovator, with a low key yet efficient approach to problem solving and an ability to listen, which have made him a trusted and effective park superintendent. And whereas Dennis Philbin has an unparalleled sense of humor, quick wit, and an ability to create new colorful adjectives to turn a phrase, and whereas Dennis Philbin takes with him an extensive knowledge of local park history
and an incredibly friendly and positive attitude that will make him sorely missed by all. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Dennis Philbin is hereby recognized for his 35 years of dedicated and devoted service, together with sincere thanks for a job well done, and express best wishes to Superintendent Philbin as he assumes his new role in retirement.
Should we get a quick photo before your boss?
We're
going to
do the photo last.
Oh, okay.
If you go to the podium, we have a few people that want to speak.
No. Okay. Boy, now we're going to hear.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jeanette Pell, General Services Agency Director. And I'm really pleased to be here today to honor Dennis for his 35 years of public service. And we actually have a plaque for you.
Oh.
I noticed Dennis has his Mickey Mouse tie on in honor of today. I also want to make sure that people recognize that after 35 years, Dennis has decided to retire. We are greatly going to miss you, and I wish you the very best on behalf of the department. And I think some other people have some things to say.
Well, Dennis, I was hoping the day would never come, but there's a lot of great things I can say about Dennis. We recently honored him for stepping down as chairman of the Safety Commission. But something I really wanted people to understand about what Dennis has done here, the legacy that he leaves behind. When I first started here, actually, I should mention his dedication to humor was such that the first time I applied for the job, he nixed me because I wasn't funny enough. So, true story. But Dennis, right out of the blocks, said, "John, we need an AED program. We need automated external defibrillators in our public facilities, so that anyone that might have a sudden cardiac arrest or something in our facilities can be attended to quickly, and their risk would decrease. The likelihood of them surviving would increase tremendously." And I thought to myself, "Well, you know, I've got a lot of big fish to fry. I'm not sure if we can attend to that." And Dennis made it very clear, "There's no bigger fish to fry." Today we have about 24 AEDs in our public facilities, and we've had a couple saves. So there are people who can literally say Dennis saved their life, and there probably will be more. So I really think the public and county employees need to extend a hand of gratitude to Dennis for making sure that this life-saving device was in lots of different facilities. Dennis, thank you very much for your dedication to safety.
I've only worked with Dennis about a year and a half, and I'd say that's my big disappointment here, because while everybody is recognizing his sense of humor, and I think it is appropriate that you started in library, so it's probably where you found all those new words you're always tossing out. The fact is, I've been very impressed with how Dennis goes about the business of the superintendent's position. When I bring an idea to him, it's a matter of a day or two, and I've got information in hand ready to make decisions with, follows up with citizen concerns immediately, has a very careful eye for the safety of our community and for the safety of our employees. It's been wonderful to work with him this period of time, and I will miss you, Dennis. I do appreciate the fact that you'll have time to pursue your his great interest with his wife is Eastern European folk dancing, and they also attend accordion festivals. So I imagine that you'll be getting across country to do those. But best wishes from County Parks, Dennis.
Well, thank you.
A few words, Dennis.
Oh, just a couple. I don't want to burst Curtis's bubble, but my musical talents, well, I'm known as the bald old coot prodigy in the office, specialty being the tuned intestinal tract. So, but I, on a serious note, I want to thank the Academy, the Board of Supervisors for this this honor, and the recognition. I wouldn't be here without the love of my life, Shelley, my wife and best friend I could ever have. My sons, my mom. Sorry to put you through this, lady. All my siblings who've always been very supportive. All my coworkers who I haven't met anybody in the county that I didn't at least learn something from. Even if, like, in the case of Fred Andrews, some people are here just as a warning to others. But it's, you know, 35 years, obviously a long time. I had to enjoy it or I wouldn't have stayed. So the only regret I have is I grew up thinking I wanted to be, you know, something, somebody. I should have been more specific. And I look back, seeing the guys in uniform, that's really where I started. Actually, I go back to, you want to wrap your brain around this. When I first started as a library page, which you made so much humor with, the first guy to ever train me was Jack Craigie, who was the other 35-year guy that was supposed to be here who conveniently skipped out. Think about that. But anyway, I can remember my days working out at Lopez Lake. Part of that, after I got done being a gate attendant, I cleaned restrooms 5 days a week for a couple of years was one of the jobs. And it always made me wonder why they lock restrooms in gas stations. Are they afraid somebody's going to clean them? So, and with all the reports you write as rangers and stuff, I'd have to go back to the nuns at Mission High where I went to school and ask them, was cursive really necessary? So anyway, I have found out during my tenure here that bad decisions do make good stories, because I've had a couple of those. And I think my mom learned this lesson. I've learned it, that no matter how hard you try and bring your children up, they'll eventually get arrested and end up in the paper. So, but last of all, I just want to again extend my appreciation for this. It's been a wonderful career. The only way I can characterize it is, it's all about the journey. It's not the destination. I had a wonderful time doing this, and I hope everybody has a job or something they can do that they just love so much. And I really enjoyed this, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your wife up here?
What proof that we have nothing?
The hardware. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Am I centered?
I think so. Ask your chiropractor.
As a philosophic question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. You'll be missed. You'll be missed. Okay, I think that is the last of our. So we have one more.
I'm his little brother.
Oh, okay.
The county gave him a gift of a plaque. I am giving him the gift of hair.
Oh. Okay.
That's his real hair from 40 years ago. 30 years ago.
Wow.
I did that.
I think we'll leave that without comment.
Wise decision.
I thought, yes. Okay. And with that note, we will take a break and come back in 15 minutes. Okay. We're back, and we are headed into public comment. Let me begin with our Parks Director, Curtis Black, and then followed by Jolie Lucas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm Curtis Black, Deputy Director of County Parks. And we wanted to make the board aware and the public aware that the first public meeting is about to be held, and there's the information up there, Wednesday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at Cambria Grammar School, and it is the first meeting of the North San Luis Obispo County Coastal Trails Master Plan. This master plan is going to incorporate public input and various agencies, Cambria Community Service District, California Conservation Corps, State Parks, County, the Coastal Conservancy, and both County Planning and County Parks are going to be involved in this. For more information, listeners can go to slowcoastaltrail.com, slowcoastaltrail.com. And we encourage all people, whether you live up in Cambria or someplace further south or east, head on up there and you get your chance for public input.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask, Mr. Black, this is, by the way, a very exciting opportunity, planning a wonderful feature that will be a landmark in this community, the California Coastal Trail, particularly in the northern part of our north coast, which I'm proud to represent. We'll be doing the planning along the 18 miles of the coastline in front of Hearst Ranch. But how far south is this planning effort going to go?
I can get back with you on that. I'm not certain just how far south it goes.
Yeah. I just would encourage all who love the coast and love to get outside to come and participate in this. This is the start of a very big project and very exciting.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Lucas, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning. My name is Jolie Lucas. I'm with the Friends of Oceano Airport. Just getting over the flu, so you'll have to bear with a little bit of laryngitis. I wanted to thank the board for your support of our Oceano Airport and give you a brief update about what we've been doing in the past year since I saw you last, at least in these chambers. We started off with our Oceano Airport Celebration Day. We had 120 airplanes on the ramp and 500 of our community members who attended this free event. We followed that with having a fly-in movie night, and before you is a flyer about our upcoming fly-in movie night. That's on April 30th. But we had it this past summer. We had about 80 folks in our campground. It's a free event. It's open to the public. We had lots of members of our community there. We showed a double feature that was kid-friendly, had s'mores and made hot dogs and sat around the fire rings and watched the movies. It's a great way for folks to get to know our little airport and that it does have a campground. And many folks flew in their airplanes and then spent the night there at Oceano. As well, this summer we received a call from the YMCA on very short notice that a camp director had become ill and they had 40 children that they needed an activity for. And my husband was asked if he could go down to Oceano Airport and tour the children and let them see what the facilities are. And as well, they were able to get inside of an airplane when he asked if anybody wanted to come inside the airplane. He had 35 hands that raised. Toys for Tots took place December 4th. Our five cities Toys for Tots said that their demand was up 30% in this economy. And due to our Toys for Tots event, we raised about $450, which turns into $4,500 worth of buying power and 13 boxes of toys. Upcoming, we have Oceano Airport Celebration Day on May 14th. Please join us. It is a salute to our veterans. We will be highlighting their service and the services to the community, and as well profiling our emergency responders that come out of Oceano. We've had life flights and angel flights into Oceano, as well as law enforcement flights. So it's not just a club for pilots. It's a community service. It's a way that we can be prepared in the event of a disaster, and it's also part of our national air safety system in the United States. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas. Al Barrow, followed by Richard Margetson.
Can we see the overhead? My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. Loving kindness to all creatures. Good morning to everyone. On the overhead, there's a letter that was from Sam Blakesley, California Legislature, making people aware that there was a new fault that needs a seismic study. And it's come to my attention, a group of senators led by Sam, including Atkins, Cheeseborough, Corbett, Evans, Dickinson, Kehoe, Huffman, Leno, Vargas, a bipartisan group have requested and demanded a study of the newly discovered shoreline fault to be seismic investigated, with a study to be completed before relicensing the Diablo plant. It also has an effect on the Los Osos Prohibition Zone, since we're within 10 miles. Since the Los Osos collection system is less than 10 miles from this fault, and ground lurching can destroy and damage a gravity collection system, and repairs will be prohibitively expensive, it would be foolhardy to start a design construction effort before the study is released in December 2013. In 2003 an inactive fault moved and the people in Paso Robles were killed. Damage was extensive, as it was in Los Osos water towers and fire department. That was 50 miles from us. Sam Blakesley testified at a Blue Ribbon hearing last fall that the state would force the study completion before extending the licenses further. Mothers for Peace have stated in a federal complaint that the earthquake hazard has not been fully evaluated, nor has it been evaluated in our EIR process for our sewer. The implications for the Los Osos gravity sewer would be catastrophic, as pipes and manholes would tend to float and separate, as I have shown you in earlier comments. A small-diameter, shallow, low-pressure collection system could be repaired more quickly with greater flex in the pipes that would receive less damage. By reference, I would like to enter into the record the Sam Blakesley video found here at this link. Last week, you passed a due diligence resolution to take the Los Osos project, committing $189 million, $97 million, which is collection system. It's cheaper by $57 million to have a step collection system. In addition, the septic tanks will provide a safe place in case of an earthquake. On some, it will save millions and will comply with USDA bulk.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Mr. Margetson, followed by Jeff Edwards. If you wouldn't mind sending a copy to the clerk, I'd appreciate it.
Richard Margetson. So I guess it doesn't matter when you turn your slip in anymore, you get pulled to the front. That's fine. You can play your games. Last week you took the project. CDM was the only responder to the RFP for redesigning the collection system. All we heard for years was how this was going to be a competitive process. Ripley Pacific lobbied this board to present on the collection system. Weren't added to the short list. Much controversy about that short list. The point scale, how those three were shortlisted, why they were shortlisted. You get one responder. In the future, maybe the evaluation form should include points and a question. Do you intend to respond to the RFP when it comes out if you're shortlisted? you basically now have a sole source contract. Oh, yes, you will approve a fee schedule, and it'll come before the board, and you will unanimously approve it and go forward. But all we've heard is contractor competition out there is what's going to drive this project down. I hope this isn't an indication of what's coming. So I think we're going to have some serious problems down the road on other aspects of this project. And I'm sure Ripley Pacific would have responded. Mr. Meacham, in response to your comment about why the whole community isn't hooking up, part of half of the premise was that there's more linear feet. There would be more linear feet on average running in front of those properties outside the prohibition zone, which would drive the overall cost up. Except for a couple of areas, I think it would have been cost prohibitive, and that would have been the middle school and the community church that I brought to your attention during the rates and charges discussion. I think both of those should be hooked up. They're right across the street from homes that do have to hook up, and you're talking about 2 to 3 million gallons of effluent a year. And then finally, you know, I know that you think we're the silent majority, or the vocal minority, I'm sorry, and there's a silent majority out there, but the vocal minority caused a recall and moved this project. So when you hear that we're the silent minority, be careful. And Mr. Hill, you should probably keep your microphone
off. Mr. Edwards, followed by Michael Hawking.
Because I heard what you said.
Mr. Edwards.
Yes, Mr. Hill. Good morning, board. How are you? My name is Jeff Edwards. I wanted to bring to your board's attention a quite serious matter. Some of you may know that on Sunday morning, South Bay Boulevard was closed for a number of hours. South Bay Boulevard is the link between Los Osos and Morro Bay. The closure was precipitated by a relatively modest amount of rainfall Saturday night and Sunday morning. There was a high tide that morning. It was 5 foot at about 11:15 a.m., but specifically, the bridge over Choro Creek at South Bay Boulevard and State Park Road was closed. Well, it was underwater. And the big problem is that the bridge, which was the new bridge, which was constructed just 12 years ago, now appears to have reached its useful life, unfortunately. This is unless remedial action can be taken to remove sedimentation and silt that's filled up under the bridge and is basically blocking the flow of Choro Creek into Morro Bay. And in years past, Choro Creek has been able to naturally scour and create a flow channel that didn't flood the bridges. For those of you may remember, that used to be called the Twin Bridges, which were replaced in around 1999 at the cost of over $5 million. It took literally almost a decade to make that project happen. And at one time, Twin Bridges had a clearance of well overhead. But this, again, is silted in, and hence the new bridge was constructed to correct the problem, but now the problem's back. And this is a problem that is going to be chronic. And while the road was closed on Sunday, if this were to have occurred on a weekday, it would have created a lot of problems for the communities of Morro Bay and Los Osos. It's been documented that the businesses in both Morro Bay and Los Osos really depend on that important transportation connection. The high school and the middle school is disrupted. The high school in Morro Bay and the middle school in Los Osos has been disrupted if that avenue of circulation is cut off. But most importantly, from an emergency response standpoint, it leaves the community of Los Osos only one way in and one way out on Los Osos Valley Road. And it's obvious from the situation that's occurring in Japan and the fact that we have a nuclear reactor quite close that this is something that needs attention. It really, to get in and remove the sediment seems to me, unless you're going to spend another $10 or $15 million on a new bridge, removing the sediments is crucial. And I'll close, Mr. Chairman, by saying that It's really the National Marine Fisheries Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that are important in this consideration. And perhaps Supervisor Gibson, with his close relationship with those agencies, can help solve this problem, not in decades or years, but in months. Thank you,
Mr. Edwards. Michael Hocking, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. My name is Michael Hocking. I'm a patient of CHC. I have CMSP. My physician, Dr. Pope, diagnosed me with three hernias, one she called urgent, and that was in January. Tried to send me to surgery, and it was denied. She filed an appeal, and that was denied due to lack of funds. I was told they will not pay for it until it is life-threatening. They will not pay for it until I have to go to the emergency room. So I'm here to represent how many others that are in the same position. I am requesting that the county take a look at the possibility of refunding the county medical services program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hocking. Mr. DeFada, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Chairman Hill, Board. Ben DeFada here. I echo the previous speakers, Mr. Murchison, Mr. Barrow, Mr. Edwards. About a month ago at the Regional Water Board meeting, Supervisor Gibson was asked by some of the board members if he knew how many households would need assistance from the Gibson Sewer Relief Fund to help pay for his expensive gravity collection project for the Los Osos Sewer Project. He admitted he did not know and was waiting for the 2010 census results. He has been waiting 4 years for the census to take place. This time, he should have been done at the start of this project. Meantime, by not doing that, he burnt up over $8 million in 4 years of time. If he was not so insistent that he build his expensive gravity project, we could have had it built by now with a newer technology affordable project. One man's decision, study after study, pick and choose, those studies that suit his gravity choice. Meantime, it was bought out by the public that the Midtown location, the Broderson location, site, expensive cost of this project, they're all wrong. And a few other things that Al Burrow brought out, too, are very important. Like the placement of this microphone, for instance, the previous microphone, for 7 years, it was the size of a clam, 2 feet away from the speaker, and you had to shout to be heard on the radio or the audience. Now, this newer microphone is on the wrong side of this lectern. The speaker is facing you square at an angle to you, and the mic is on the left side in the small working area of this little table where the speaker's paperwork usually is. It would have been better to place it more forward in the middle of this lectern. I know it will never be changed because someone's ego is involved, just like Mr. Gibson's ego will never change from his gravity sewer to a better, affordable, green alternative back on the sewer. Back on the sewer subject, 4 years ago, it would have been easy to see that the majority of those households that reside in a prohibition zone are economically depressed. They are the low, medium, fixed income people that cannot afford over $100 a month, as testified by the arm of the federal government, declaring that majority of those in the zone are officially declared a disadvantaged community. And to look at a worse situation, we are in the middle of a double-digit recession. Meantime, for whatever reason, he continued to spend over $8 million pursuing this flawed, overpriced, unaffordable, gravity, stinking part of this project. Why does he care so much how stuff gets to the treatment plant? What other reason is there? Doesn't Mr. Gibson think that some new waste technologies have evolved in the last 100 years? This is not the place to lay big pipes deep in the sand dunes we live on. We have so many other things to worry about, like native artifacts, earthquakes, floods, tsunamis, L.A. Conchita Hillside slides.
Thank you, Mr. DeFada. Mr. Greening, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and two topics. First, it was good to see Dr. Crocker here, as well as to honor Jack O'Connell, and I hope most of you saw the column he did in the T not long ago, basically reinforcing the need for the people to be able to vote on whether we wish to extend the taxes currently in effect so that there is a revenue piece of the puzzle as well as a cut piece of the puzzle in balancing the extremely imbalanced situation we have in Sacramento. It appears we've lost the opportunity to have a vote on the 7th of June, but maybe at least to have a vote during the month of June, and to not have extraneous, irrelevant demands made, such as eviscerating the California Environmental Quality Act, which is not an obstacle to projects, but a shaper of better projects when it's used properly. In any event, I'm hoping that each of you collectively and individually is doing all you can to reach the people who represent us here, as we the citizens are doing, because the two people representing us in Sacramento could be keys to unlocking that obstacle to the people voting. The other topic I want to bring up, tomorrow as part of the Air Pollution Control District, you will be having an item to essentially recognize the dissolution of the MOA on the Oceano Dunes particulate mitigation as it has been, and essentially discussing the creation of a new type of relationship among the parties, which include the APCD, state parks, and the county. And so my question is, when will the county have that discussion before the people of the county? Because obviously, if the old way is dissolving, then the county's role is dissolving and also has to be reconfigured to answer to the people. We are in wind season, and I think the people of the county would like to know what are the mitigations. I've heard some rumors about hay. I don't know whether it's in place or not. I'm not sure whether throwing a little hay on the ground is something that has actually required the person hours involved with the MOA to date to come up with, or whether it's having any effect. But in any event, I look forward to a robust discussion tomorrow at the APCD, but you as the county also need an agendized item, so I'd be curious to know when that's coming. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone, a bedroom community of Los Osos, blue-collar workers, if they have a job, and seniors just able to make it financially. Last week, the board had and heard from residents in the Prohibition Zone that preface they are going to pay the $25,000 upfront sewer assessment when the notices are sent out. That is their privilege, but these are not the people that have helped out at the food kitchen, the food distribution, or seen children come to the Maxine Lewis event with an adult, have someone offer them a cookie and hot chocolate, and wonder if they are supposed to take it because their parent or adult cannot pay for it. Many people are having extreme financial problems with all the increases of just living expenses. Some are not aware of the additional cost at the time of their property taxes this year. Churches are having poor attendance, for they are having financial problems also. The fund Supervisor Gibson continues to talk about has not been seen, printed out, or has a member of this board seen it printed out? Have any of you seen any financial distribution sheets that are going to be available to the community? If there are earnings or interests, or if there are any administration costs that this fund is accruing? This is a fund that every board member should see. Is it available? Is it going to be available? This is a fund that every board member should be interested in, not just listening to one of your colleagues talk about it. Every one of us is in financial problems. Seniors, young people, and perhaps even you sitting on this board are also finding the pinch of money. I know the board looks at expenditures for the county. Do you think the public is exempt from these same concerns? If not, perhaps you will take it into consideration that we, the public, are too having a financial problem. And remember that when you continue to vote money for a sewer project that is in question. Thank you.
Ms. Owen?
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the Los Osos Sewer Twilight Zone. Again, the area of this county where you just can't do anything right, no matter how long you try and how much money you throw at it, and no matter how many opportunities you have to take the right path. Anyway, I wanted to speak. I'm very concerned. Last week, we ended up at the great bidding process that was promised pretty much dissipated and disappeared with Montgomery Watts Aharza leaving and the other second bidder leaving just one bidder. And I was even surprised. I had misunderstood. I thought this was to start designing the, actually seeing what it would cost to install this gravity sewer. But no, it is just to revamp the studies that we already spent over $30 million on that Montgomery Watts Aharza did. It's just to look these over and fine-tune them. I'm wanting to ask Mr. Gibson, what have we been doing for 8 years? I mean, for $8 million in 4 years, pardon me. Is Montgomery Watts Aharza officially removed from our project in all forms? Will they not be a consultant to this incoming group? Their last project was never investigated, but it should have been, because when they put out the bids for construction, those bids came in 48% over what they had underbid. There's something totally wrong there, and it was never investigated. And that's why I believe Montgomery Watts Aharza is leaving, because he does nothing but taint this project process. I would like to know what the cost is. Last week was Sunshine in Government Week. I'd like to ask you to extend it through the rest of the year. And please tell the people of Los Osos what that contract was for. You said there was a sealed envelope. I don't see why that needs to be a secret, so I'd like that to come forward. Mr. Barrow's comments about the earthquake, I don't know what you're thinking. If you're worried about a nuclear plant breaking, maybe you ought to really start thinking about 42 miles of pipes breaking loose when we get the liquefaction. It's a nightmare to put that type of technology in Los Osos, yet Mr. Gibson and Mr. Pava Ogren continue choosing that instead of letting us have an alternative selection process that would show us safety, affordability, and maintenance costs, which are estimated to be one half. You have to question what's wrong here. The consultants have not only nickeled and dimed us, they're at $8 million, and this is going to continue. That is what I'm a little bit afraid of, is now this is just a way to keep some of the county staff at work, and it's all coming in on Los Osos home payers' backs. We start paying $64 in July for a project that isn't even designed.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. I'm going to close it to public comment. Supervisor Gibson, quick comment?
On two topics, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One, the APCD. We do have an APCD meeting tomorrow where we will be talking about the Oceano Dunes particulate pollution issue. But because it doesn't get the same distribution as our meeting, I would observe and first would ask the chair or the administrator if you know when we're going to be considering a revision of the MOU. I hadn't heard that it has been agendized yet.
I'm working with staff right now to agendize that. We're waiting to see how the APCD meeting.
So potentially within the next 2-3 weeks,
yes.
After action on the APCD.
Yes.
Second, there is a set of pilot projects that are designed and ready to deploy in the dunes. what we're waiting for is for the rain to stop. And, you know, I've got a serious conflict of interest there, interested in seeing those projects move forward, but at the same time, this rain is doing us a lot of good. So observing discussions recently that we are waiting for a few dry days to make it useful to go out on the dunes to do the experiments, and I think we'll have a bit more discussion of that at APCD tomorrow. Second, on the question of the Los Osos sewer, the regular folks who come to comment on it have largely offered us comments that we've heard many times before, but I do realize in and responded to before, but I do realize in one of the comments there might be a small bit of confusion. The request for proposals that produced the single response from a company called CDM. I apologize for not remembering the last names that compose that acronym, was for design services for the redesign of the collection system to account for largely the fact that the treatment plant has been moved from its original location. The request was put out to those who had been previously shortlisted and qualified for those kinds of design services, and it is a relatively in the overall scheme of things, it's a relatively small contract and a small project. The consequence of that redesign will be a set of final drawings that will then be put out to bid, and we do expect a wide range of bidders and are, in fact, structuring the bid packages in a way to maximize competition. So I wanted to be sure the public understood that what we're talking about now is not a contract for the construction of the sewer. It is leading up to construction contracts, which we hope to let later this year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gibson. And before we close public comment and move to our hearings, just wanted to note that there is a smart meter workshop scheduled for next week. PG&E is holding one March 30th. That's next Wednesday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. That's going to be at the City-County Library here in San Luis Obispo on Palm Street. Again, that's next Wednesday, March 30th, 6 to 8 p.m., and they will have representatives available to answer questions at the open house that you might have about smart meters next Wednesday. Okay. Madam Clerk, if you could introduce the first item, please.
Are we going to skip to D1?
No, I think we're going to start with Mr. Navarro's
D1. See. Hearing to consider the proposed 2011 action plan of the San Luis Obispo County Urban County Consolidated Plan for the Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnership Act, and Emergency Shelter Grant Programs. All districts, it's recommended the item be continued to May 10th, 2011.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chairman Hill and members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tony Navarro from the Department of Planning and Building. And today we are asking that the board continue this item, which actually has now allowed the couple cities to take their recommendations and approvals for inclusion in the 2011 action plan.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Navarro. I will open up to the public, seeing no request from Mr. Buhner. Are you on this item?
Yes.
No. Okay.
No.
Seeing no request from the public, we'll close it and bring it back to the board. Continue.
Oh, sure. Move.
Go ahead.
Staff's recommendation to continue to May 10.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Gibson, seconded by Mr. Meacham to continue. I think we can do this by voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Moving on to this is where we're going to skip to the parks one before the groundwater management one. So that's C2.
Courtney is here. We'll
do D1.
We're going to do D1?
D1. It looks like our parks folks are ready to roll.
Okay. D1.
Maybe
two. Consideration of a request to approve a resolution accepting public trail offers located within Napomo into the county's trail system, the certificate of acceptance, and opening the previously accepted Inga trail easement to the public provided the necessary trail improvements are made and volunteers agree to maintain the trail opening. Fourth District, it's recommended approval.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Black?
Thank you very much, Deputy Director County Parks, Curtis Black. We have a report with a great deal of information here. Today is Senior Park Planner Sean Cooper to provide that for us.
He's going to give us the shortened version of the great deal of information, right?
As quickly as possible.
Good morning, Chairman Hill and members of the board. I'm going to present a group of 35 trail easement offers in Napomo that are recommended for acceptance. This is the third group to come before you as part of a comprehensive process in accepting all of the outstanding trail offers in the county. These trail easement offers were offered to San Luis Obispo County Parks as a condition of the land use permitting process. Since 1991, Parks has conditioned discretionary projects to provide trail corridors. In 2006, the board adopted the Parks and Rec element, which guides staff in determining proposed trail locations. In December of 2009, the board directed staff to implement a program for accepting all of the outstanding trail offers, easements, and land banking them for the future. In December 2009, staff received direction from the board to complete the comprehensive process of reviewing trail easement offers and accepting those consistent with the Parks and Rec element. Work with the Trails Advisory Committee and the Parks and Recreation Commission to determine priority trail development projects once all of the trail easement offers are accepted countywide, and to return to the board with the Parks and Recreation Commission's recommendations to develop and open specific trails. To date, we have researched the third group of easements. We prepared maps that are in your packet and part of this presentation, and we presented the 35 easement trail offers to the Trails Advisory Subcommittee, and also presented these 35 trail easement offers to the Parks and Recreation Commission. Both the Trails Advisory Committee and the Parks and Recreation Commission have recommended that the board accept all 35 of these trail easement offers. This index map depicts a page out of our Parks and Rec element to orient you. Highway 101 is running up toward the north part of the page. The brown dotted lines are the proposed paths in our Park and Rec element. The red dashed lines are the easements that are ready for acceptance. The blue boxes are the detailed areas, and I'm going to go through all the detailed areas so you can get a better understanding of where the specific easements are. This is just an overview of the Napomo area and where these 35 easements are located. The first easement offer is located off of Thompson Road. It's east of Thompson Road and east of Highway 101. And this is a 20-foot wide easement. Next one is located near the Santa Maria River on the south part of the page. And this is a 10-foot wide easement. Next one is located along Highway 1. It's part of the Anza Trail corridor. The Anza Trail corridor is the big, the wide pink swath, and these are located within that Anza Trail corridor. This is a 15 feet wide corridor. Next ones are located along Dawn Road. This is a 12 feet wide easement. And then there's also another section located along West Wind Way. And this is a 10-foot wide easement. Next one is located along Pomeroy Road and Willow. This is a 10-foot wide easement. This one is located along Viva Way. And this is a 13-foot wide easement. The next group are located south of Cabina Caballo, and there's a group that are 12 feet wide in this section. Then we go north of Pomeroy, and these are 10 feet wide. There's a group south of Pomeroy Road, which is 10 feet wide. And then the subdivision up to the north part of the map, which is along Live Oak Ridge, and is 10 feet wide. Next in the process, we will examine and assemble the fourth group of trail easement offers. This will include the remaining NAPOMO offers that are ready for acceptance and the remaining countywide easement offers. Accepting these trail easement offers will not open them for public use. The financial considerations include minor liability and maintenance. The estimate for maintaining these easements is less than $5,000 per year. Staff will track the actual costs. To date, there have been no additional costs associated with those that were previously accepted in May and November of 2010. Once all of these easement offers are accepted into the county's inventory, the Parks and Recreation Commission will review the trail easements and provide recommendations for developing and opening trails based on the scoring criteria outlined in the Parks and Recreation element. These include safety, cost, connectivity, and number of people served. The Inga Trail easement was accepted by the county in November 2010. Prior to the county's acceptance, this trail was improved and maintained by Ride NAPOMO with the consent of the private landowner. Ride NAPOMO has committed to making the necessary improvements to bring the trail up to county standards and continue to provide ongoing maintenance for the trail. The Inga Trail segment is located between Sandydale Drive and Inga Road. It's a 10-foot wide corridor, and as I mentioned, it has been improved by Ride NAPOMO. This is a picture showing the entrance to the Inga Trail from Sandydale. As you can see on the right side of the trail, there is a lodgepole fence which designates the boundary between the private property owner and the easement. This is showing the easement further into the path. You can see there is no fence along this part of the easement. Our recommendations are to add a fence along the entire length of the easement and clear any vegetation that is growing within the trail. The county is responsible for assuring the Inga Trail is improved according to the Parks and Recreation element standards and maintained in a safe condition. Ride NAPOMO has committed to making the necessary improvements, including adding a fence along the entire length of the trail and clearing vegetation within the trail corridor. These improvements are estimated to cost approximately $5,000. Ride NAPOMO has committed to maintaining the trail, valued at approximately $1,000 annually. The county would incur some minor administrative and oversight costs, estimated to be approximately $500 annually. In closing, the board action staff is requesting today is to accept the 35 offers of dedication for public trail easement located in NAPOMO and to approve opening the Inga Trail easement to the public, provided the necessary improvements are made and maintenance is provided by volunteers such that there are no added operating costs to the county. This concludes my presentation. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have at this time. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Supervisor Patterson has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cooper, a question. On page D17, the process and next steps, you talk about how we've accumulated over time these many offers to dedicate, but we have not accepted them, and it's created this accumulation, which has caused us to go back and review them all. That's changing in the future, as I understand it. You're no longer going to not accept them. You are going to accept them. And my question is, going forward, after we finish that fourth phase of the accumulated easements, mm-hmm. will we be evaluating them as they are offered, rather than not accepting them? We would accept them, but as part of that process, do we actually do what you're doing now with all of them so we don't have this accumulation?
The process will be, right now, in the past we've rejected the trail without prejudice. Mm-hmm. In the future, we will accept them with the final map. As we sign off, we have a system where we get a referral, we'll recommend a condition for a trail easement. The developer will come back with a final map. Parks will sign off on the final map showing that the trail is shown as we've recommended. At that point, when the project goes to the board for approval of the whole lot division or subdivision, we will accept that with the final map. So it'll be accepted with the other improvements on the map or subdivision map.
But it doesn't necessarily at that time become part of the trail system. You go through the process that you go through with all the other easements, I presume.
It would become an easement that is accepted at that time by the county instead of an offer that's waiting for us to accept. So we'll accept it at the final map rather than waiting to a later date.
Right, but it doesn't necessarily, because you've accepted it, become a trail.
Right.
It still goes through the rest of the process.
Correct. Just like accepting these 35 today doesn't open them to the public. It just accepts the easements into our inventory for future use.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to open up to the public. I have requests to speak from Hans Hansen and Jim Harrison, please. Mr. Hansen?
I'm Hans Hansen, and I'm with Ride Nipomo. First of all, I must thank the Department of Recreation and Parks for all the hard work, and thank you, Sean and Curtis and Jeanette. And I see this as a very positive step forward. In the past, we have run across a wall constantly when we have tried to get trails. And now the walls start to move a little forward. So we're going in the right directions. And I hope that you gentlemen will accept those 35 trails. Especially one, the Inga Trail, is very important safety-wise for horseback rider. So please accept it. And I hope you will do that in the future too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Harrison?
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. My name is Jim Harrison. I am from Nipomo, and I am also part of Ride Nipomo, and I'm here just to encourage you to go ahead and accept these trails. And we did go ahead with Mrs. Bodger when she did the subdivision and offered the trails. We went in and made some improvements on the trail. The reason the fence isn't all the way is because we were told by the parks to stop putting the trail in until county accepted the trail. And that's why that fence isn't in. Once you accept it and we're told, we'll put the fence in and we will continue to maintain it. And I'd like to thank Sean and the Trails Committee and Curtis, all the rest of them that's worked on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. That's our last request to speak on this item. We'll bring it back to the board. If there's no further questions, I'll look for a motion from Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Would move to approve staff's recommendation on this, but before we do that, I would like to also thank Curtis and Sean and entire park staff and the Parks Commission for their approval. We started on this task many years ago when we started the Parks Element. It was one of my first projects on the Parks Commission when I was appointed in 2003. Got the Parks and Rec Element done, and trails was something that was very important, very high on the list of improvements for the Parks and Rec Element. And about 2.5 years ago, we started on our task to get these accepted and get them logged into the county books. So it's a great deal of pleasure for me to make this recommendation, and I do thank County Parks and their staff for what they've done. But I'd also like to thank the people of Ride Nipomo, Jim, Hans, LJ, and all the rest of the people for their patience and their diligence to get these passed and get them accepted for the good of Nipomo and the good of the county. Thank you.
Okay, that's very good. Yeah. We have a second from Supervisor Meacham, so the motion from Supervisor Teixeira and the second by Supervisor Meacham. Roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay, and then we will go to C2 as we switch our staff positions.
C2 is a hearing to consider a resolution of intention to develop a groundwater management plan for the Paso Robles groundwater basin. Item was continued from February 8th, and it's recommended approval.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Clerk. I see our fine public works folks. Ms. Howard, you are ready to roll. Almost.
I think so. Good afternoon, Chairperson Hill, members of the board. My name is Courtney Howard. I work in County Public Works. First of all, I wanted to thank your board and the clerk and especially General Services for accommodating our request to swap spots. I appreciate that. We're here today to talk about the Paso Robles Groundwater Management Plan, and our objective is to have your board consider adopting a resolution of intent to develop the plan and to understand how the plan would relate with other efforts that we're working on. Should I switch it on the other? Okay. Pardon me for a moment.
Looks like you'll have some technical help here, perhaps. Since we do have a copy, if you want to begin talking while he gets the PowerPoint working, okay. You can.
Thanks. Just an overview of what we'll go over today, the background on how we came to be here today, the groundwater management plan itself and what it will contain, talk about implementing the groundwater management plan once it's developed, its relationship with other efforts that the district and others are working on in the Paso Basin, and then finish up with the recommended action. So a little bit of background. There was an opportunity to apply for a local groundwater assistance grant through the state's grant program. And our county had submitted a grant application for the community of Los Osos. And each agency is only allowed to submit one application. So we asked the City of Paso Robles to submit the application for the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin, which they did, and they were successful in receiving that grant. And so we later entered into a memorandum of understanding with the city to ensure our cooperation on developing that plan. And there are several benefits to developing a groundwater management plan. Obviously, bringing all the stakeholders together to manage such a precious resource is one of the key benefits, so we can all have a common understanding and approach to maintaining that resource. We do have a basin that is in decline in terms of levels, and those need to be stabilized. And your board took some recent actions with the resource capacity study for the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin to address that situation. And it's also consistent, the plan itself will be consistent with other efforts that we'll go over a little later in the presentation. Also, having a groundwater management plan makes you eligible for more grants. So if there are different projects that are identified as a result of the planning process, those can go forward to the grant programs under the groundwater management plan. You may have also heard of AB 3030 plan that was the legislation that enacted the water code that outlined what a management plan should contain and the process for developing one. There are certain components in that water code that speak to what is mandatory to be in a management plan, what's voluntary, and then there's also suggestions from the State Department of Water Resources on what to include in a groundwater management plan. And the approach via the grant application and the scope of work was to address all of those components in the plan. We're going to go into how our current efforts are addressed in the plan, but I just also wanted to mention that there are some required components for a plan that relate to source protection and more the water quality side of things that other, more regulatory agencies and our current ordinances cover in terms of wellhead protection areas and regulating contaminated water, migration, well abandonment procedures, and construction policies. So those are also in the plan. I pulled out the overall purpose for the groundwater management plan is to provide a framework for coordinating the groundwater and surface water management activities. I emphasized framework there, so to emphasize that it's really a stakeholder-developed plan that all can use to implement actions and take proactive steps in helping to manage the plan. And in developing the plan since the grant was awarded, we've had several stakeholder workshops. And we also broke into sub-areas. If you'll recall, the Paso Basin study broke the basin into sub-areas to be able to talk more specifically about conditions in each area of the basin. And so we went into a sub, we utilized those sub-areas to focus our workshops with those stakeholders in those areas to talk about how they want to see the basin maintained and the, what the conditions should be into the future. We talked about, at those workshops, we talked about the groundwater issues that are out there, which are mainly levels at this point declining. There are some areas of quality issues, but overall the quality is good, and there's no indication of land subsidence. So quality, levels, and subsidence are the key elements, key mandatory components to address in the plan. The other component of a plan is to establish basin management objectives. You know, how do we want to maintain the basin? What condition do we want to make sure it stays in over time? And since it was levels that is the main concern right now, the objectives are across the board to stabilize or maintain the levels in the basin. And then the other component is identifying actions to take if we, you know, they're currently declining, but actions to take to maintain the levels as well. And a lot of them relate to, are very similar to what the resource capacity study implemented in terms of conservation actions and monitoring, improved monitoring actions, so we can continue to understand the conditions of the basin over time. We've also, various entities have taken significant actions in terms of bringing in Nacimiento water to address the situation, and your board took significant land use actions via the resource capacity study. So once the plan is developed, there's also it also speaks to how are we going to implement the plan over time. Again, it's a stakeholder-led effort, you know, a cooperative effort to understand the basin over time and to report on actions that the various stakeholders, whether it's individual agencies, your board, or agricultural groups, rural residences, are taking to maintain those levels or stabilize them. Continue to have public meetings. There have been certain participants that have been highly engaged, and so to capitalize on that, having a steering committee that's really focused on the plan implementation was suggested to be the mechanism for ongoing stakeholder involvement in implementing the plan. But of course, those even though those there'll be key people involved on that committee, there'll be public meetings that all interested parties would be advised of. The other component to the plan implementation is an annual report that would report on the basin levels, looking at how the levels are responding to the various actions taken and in comparison with the basin management objective of stabilizing those levels. It'll summarize the actions that have been taken and any other recommended actions to take based on that analysis. And then the plan itself would be available for use and adoption by others as they chose to do. Along with the implementation are the funding considerations. Things to consider is how the Flood Control District will remain involved. Historically, the Flood Control District has been highly involved with the basin study and the basin modeling efforts. Non-governmental organizations and other agencies have also been highly involved and will continue to be involved. The Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance even recently formed a water committee to help with this effort, and then all the cities and the CSDs have been highly involved, and several rural residents and the advisory committees have all been involved. It's the idea of the funding considerations is consistent with the resource capacity study, and there's we'll go into detail about the recommendations that are both in the RCS and in the plan. And as these entities are all working together, there's opportunities for joint funding efforts, similar to the water balance update that was conducted. There may be opportunities to jointly fund some of these additional studies that would be conducted upon plan implementation. Now we'll get into some of the relationships with the other efforts going on in the county, starting off with other district efforts. The Master Water Plan and the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. Basically, this groundwater management plan, the efforts associated with that can inform the Master Water Plan, as the Master Water Plan is the district's mechanism for reporting to your board on efforts throughout the county and conditions in all areas. And so if there's a management plan in the Paso Basin, and they're continuously collecting data and analyzing data, that will greatly inform the Master Water Plan now and into the future. The Integrated Regional Water Management Plan pulls that Master Water Plan data along with flood control information and water quality information, ecosystem information, and so the Groundwater Management Plan will also inform that plan as we look at water resources from all of those perspectives throughout the county. There's also some the local efforts in the Paso Basin, the Paso Basin Agreement, and the Resource Capacity Study, which I'll cover in more detail next. Our general plan, the conservation element, and the land use and circulation element update, which is currently underway, are related to this plan as well. The conservation element gives us not only policies but implementation strategies in terms of managing groundwater, and the groundwater management plan is actually implementing those strategies that were identified in the conservation element. The efforts under the land use and circulation element update, the planning department is conducting a very detailed analysis, land use analysis, for growth now and into the future, and that data can be used for pumping updates as the plan is implemented. And then there's the efforts by all the local stakeholders, whether it's urban water management plans by the individual communities or master water plans by the individual communities. The Wine Country Alliance, the UC Extension, is conducting a study of vineyard application rates, so we'll have that data to inform the plan as well in terms of water applied to vineyards. So I'll cover the Resource Capacity Study and the Paso Basin Agreement in a little more detail here. I wanted to highlight the recommendations that came out of the RCS, improving data collection, enhancing coordination, conservation programs, and addressing the fiscal issues associated with continuing our special studies. You'll see all those repeated in the Groundwater Management Plan. And allows us to coordinate in that area to address those recommendations. And then as we implement the Groundwater Management Plan and those recommendations, we can use the information that comes out of that process to update the annual summary reports through the RMS system and update the resource capacity study for the basin over time. The other key effort or agreement that's out there is the Paso Rules Groundwater Basin Agreement. It's also referred to as the PRIOR Agreement, and if you ever wanted to know what PRIOR stood for, it's Paso Robles Imperiled Overlying Rights. Basically, I think that was signed in 2005. The City of Paso Robles, San Miguel CSD, and CSA 16 are the municipal users that are signatory. There are several landowners who are termed PRIOR, referred to as PRIOR, that have also signed the agreement. And then the district itself is signed on as the technical advisor under the agreement. And this is a map that shows the current level of participation. The larger outline is the basin itself. The gray area is the municipal users. And then the sort of the boxes shows all the landowners throughout the basin that have signed the agreement. Key provisions of that agreement. One of the first provisions in the agreement when it was signed was that the that everyone agreed that the basin was not currently in a state of overdraft. But the one of the next provisions says that the flood control district has the, if it determines through published studies that it is an overdraft, it can do so following certain noticing requirements. And once that your board made that declaration of overdraft, it triggers certain it cancels the agreement and starts a timeline for the prescriptive rights, or entities could enter into litigation at that point. But as the agreement's in effect, the parties agree not to litigate until that declaration is made. There's also cooperative management provisions within that agreement that are very consistent with the groundwater management plan that's being developed. It talks about how people, how the signatories will participate in any planning efforts and contribute to the success of that management effort. Pablo will now go into how it relates to our overall flood control district efforts and our work plan.
Chairman Hill, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director. I just wanted to spend a moment here in terms of discussing with your board what you might anticipate in terms of funding implications and implementation implications. As we know, next week you're going to have a study session with the planning department regarding work plans and priorities. Probably an oversimplification of the discussion next week. But similarly, with both the Paso Basin planning efforts as well as a bullet point here on Master Water Plan, those are two very large work efforts that we're undergoing right now on the water resource side of the Flood Control District. In addition, of course, the Flood Control District also has drainage and flooding requirements, and as we've seen in recent news, we've got some significant issues on that side of the Flood Control District that need to be addressed as well. The basic approach in addressing these new work programs is that the 2011-2012 budget is going to be consistent with the current year's budget. The Flood Control District budget doesn't have any general fund money associated with it. It's primarily property tax driven, and those revenues are going to be relatively consistent from last year and this year and next year. Likewise, our labor costs are relatively consistent, and so the framework of the 2011-12 budget is going to be consistent as proposed with current year's. Nevertheless, we do know that there are some significant one-time district reserves that are coming up and available for discretion by your board. We're not at a point right now in order to make specific recommendations in the 2011-12 budget on the utilization of those one-time monies. And so what we our intent to do is that the Master Water Plan was released yesterday for public comment. Courtney had conducted a workshop yesterday. Various chapters have been released over time for comment, but the entirety of the Master Water Plan now is out for public comment. And in the next several months, as we're receiving public comments and identifying priorities associated with the Master Water Plan, we'll bring those back with draft of implementation steps underneath this plan, as well as a discussion of the major flood control and drainage issues, so that by the time the end of summer comes around, we can initiate some really good policy discussions on how to utilize that one-time money for a variety of flood control district upcoming needs. At that discussion, we will also identify these new work efforts that we can fit into the existing programs. And so it's going to be a comparison of what the existing programs are, what we can do within those existing programs to meet these new and developing needs, as well as how some of this one-time money might be addressed. And I see that being as a multiple step, because first, at the end of summer, identifying the issues and priorities and having a general discussion with your board for some policy direction, and then after that coming back with specific funding recommendations. But again, this is a significant work effort. It's something that obviously is very important both through this process of the Flood Control District as well as through the Planning Department's processes of RMS and the Resource Capacity Study and those general plan efforts. And I just wanted to provide a very brief discussion of how we intend to bring some of these issues back to your board for future consideration.
Okay, so just a review of the recommended action for today. It's a consideration of adopting a resolution of intention to develop a groundwater management plan. It's a mandatory administrative step if your board was to consider adopting the plan in the future. It starts a two-year time frame upon which the entity would have to act, your board would have to act on that adoption. And it's also to serve to generate additional stakeholder involvement now that the plan is far enough along. Try to get the word out there that it's out there, and to please let us know if you'd like to become involved in the plan development process. And we anticipate coming back to your board if you were to adopt this resolution, to consider adopting the plan itself in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. I have a question here from Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of quick questions. Ms. Howard, the funding, did that come from the Department of Water Resources for the grant, or was it from the State Water Resources Board?
It was from the State Department of Water Resources.
Okay. Thank you. And you mentioned when you were describing the contents of the groundwater management plan, you mentioned several things that weren't necessarily on the list that were also going to be included. I think water quality protection was one of those, wellhead protection. What were those? I didn't catch them all. I'm just curious.
Some of the components that are required per water code are addressed in the plan. I just wanted to recognize that the district itself may not be implementing those actions. They may be there. A lot of them are already established in terms of well construction policies and source protection areas. I'm trying to remember each one.
If I might also provide a little bit of feedback on this particular question, one of the things that I like about the DWR approach and the guidelines and these various components is that they identify work efforts that are logically done by a number of different entities. The water quality side of it, the Department of, our health agency has a certain role. But in the development of a plan, they want to see that we understand who those others are, even if their work is substantially done independently from, like, the flood control district. And I think that's a really good approach because in some areas, like, in San Luis Obispo County, where we're still relatively small and we know each other pretty well, we generally know who's working on various issues. But especially in the larger areas, when DWR is saying, hey, there's water quality issues, and make sure you know who's working on those water quality issues. So sometimes the plan just says, all it does is references who's working on different aspects. But again, I like DWR's approach because it, in a way, forces us to make sure we understand who's working on other independent issues.
Okay. Well, a couple of things that I'm curious to know if it would be included, and that is the identification of and perhaps protection of groundwater recharge areas. Is that included? And also environmental needs. Will that be addressed, determining what the environmental needs are for surface waters over the basin, if that's a part of it as well?
I know the resource protection strategies are the environmental demand. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and check, but we can make sure it's a component.
Okay. I think they are important, mm-hmm. that, we identify the recharge areas, make sure that they are protected in the future, mm-hmm. As well as the environmental needs. And the other thing I'm curious about, you talked about the prior agreement that's already in existence. Mr. Ogren, we discussed this briefly yesterday. I'm curious about after we develop this plan with the various partners, how do we ensure compliance, or do we or can we? What benefit is it? Is there any assurance that people would adhere to the plan once it's developed, and what happens if they don't?
I'd say through the steering committee that's developed, it's probably the mechanism by which, if it's a diverse enough group to self-regulate, I guess. I can't think of a better word. If there are certain stakeholders that aren't, participating, those others would probably speak up and, ask for their current involvement, their strength in their involvement.
Developing the plan doesn't necessarily guarantee compliance. It's a cooperative effort at best.
Right.
Okay. And then you mentioned the steering committee. How will that be selected? Who's on that?
Well, right now the suggestion is to have each agency within the basin, as well as key non-governmental organizations like the Past Rules Wine Country Alliance, the Central Coast Vineyard Team, Farm Bureau, the Resource Conservation Districts, and then to try to diversify. We were considering the at-large positions. We're not sure how many exactly, but to try to balance with to involve more rural landowners and other sectors in the basin that might not be represented by an agency or group.
Very good. Thank you. That concludes my questions, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on Supervisor Patterson's question about the prior agreement. In the prior agreement, if I remember correctly, it indicates that there was support for a groundwater management plan. And so I think that that in itself is going to try to, they're going to try to assist with this whole process from that standpoint. And I was very heavily involved in that prior agreement, and it was basically, we could see this coming down the road in terms of the potential impacts, and so we thought we've got to craft some type of an agreement that would preclude everybody jumping to legal issues. And so that was the impetus behind that. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this whole groundwater basin management plan, because it's going to take the collective efforts of a number of different agencies and groups that will have to be participatory in this. And my hope is out of the steering committee that they're well represented.
Yeah.
So that we have a good cross section of folks in the county.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meacham. Mr. Teixeira, did you have a?
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I just got a question regarding the map at the end. It shows the participating municipal users and the signatory parcels. Did the municipal users also include like parks land, county owned land, and those kind of parcels in the area, or is that not included in this map?
No, it's limited to the service areas of the San Miguel CSD, the City of Paso Robles, and County Service Area 16, Shandon. And then the district overlies, the entire basin, but it's the flood control district, which is not, the parks and those things you mentioned.
So what I'm looking at is possible large users other than ag, like the airport, and some of those, are they going to be noted on them? I don't see them noted here unless I'm missing something.
Supervisor Teixeira, Pablo Ogren, that's correct. In the agreement itself, the formal role of the county and the flood control district are specifically defined, and they don't include, the parks land. But in water resource management, as well as a lot of these efforts that we do, there's a general theory out there called good housekeeping policies. And so generally speaking, to the extent that the county and the flood control district are involved in this, the expectation is that various county operations will have policies that are consistent with these efforts. Those good housekeeping policies are, really laid out in terms of stormwater management programs and those type of planning. But again, the agreement is specifically focused in on concrete roles and responsibilities of the flood control district in here. And it was developed in order to stave off litigation, groundwater litigation, and pursue cooperative efforts, as Supervisor Meacham had adopted. And so, again, it doesn't get into a lot of the detail on the parks and stuff, but we would expect under that general theory of good housekeeping policies that all county departments are going to, work together in cooperation.
Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up. Courtney, do we have someone that's going to be participatory on the steering committee from Monterey County?
Yes, okay. Rob Johnson from Monterey.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me go to the public. Two requests to speak, Eric Greening, followed by Jerry Bunin.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and yes, it just came up front and center on the list of benefits is not getting into the kind of legal mess that they're in the Santa Maria Basin. Instead of working through lawyers and basically arguing with each other. We have all different points of view sitting around one table solving problems together. That is the model we should be using. Relative to that, I'm interested in a little more clarification of the distinction between or relationship between the current groundwater advisory committee and the ultimate steering committee. The groundwater advisory committee, and you may want to again announce the time and place for this week. Those are open meetings. Anyone is welcome. There are people who are members, but the steering committee, has a decision been made on whether environmental interests will be formally included for representation? Will that be among the at-large seats that, or will there be a specific seat? A predecessor group, the North County Water Resources Forum, looked at it as a sort of a three-legged stool, the urban uses, the agricultural uses, and the environment. And the environment is specific representation of those who would not otherwise get to the table, namely future generations and other species, but they do need to be spoken for. It was only one person, whereas there were multiple people in the other groups. But since the North County Water Resources Forum operated on a consensus basis, at that time numbers weren't that important. In any event, I just want to be sure that somehow we always make sure that environmental interests are part of the steering committee. Then I notice under management actions, that includes land use, and I was glad to see when you had the list of ongoing relevant efforts that you're including the land use and circulation element. I'm hoping that the land use and circulation element, as it's under preparation, takes into account the need to treat the Paso Robles Basin separately or to have a planning area standard that recognizes the situation there. Another land use element that should be on the list is the current ongoing effort with the Shandon Community Plan. It will be at the Planning Commission this Thursday. And, of course, it is looking at a growth scenario. And, of course, that was planned well in advance of the finding of the level of severity 3. But given, I know Mr. Patterson had a question about recharge. Ag Policy 24 requires the identification of recharge potential in any agricultural area that is planned for conversion, and I hope that we have robust data on issues like that before we lose any recharge areas. Anyway, those are just some issues and some questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Buna?
Chair Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I'll actually be brief. I'm here to encourage that your efforts to manage the groundwater basins also include vigorously pursuing supplemental water, all of its forms, nacimiento, state water, desal, gray water, recycling. Preventing general plan amendments and further subdivisions won't fix this problem. It won't even prevent this problem from worsening because agriculture, which we support, can continue to use more and more water. The long-term solution is going to be more water. We need it for ag, we need it for economic development, and we need it for the homes to house the economic development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bunin. That will close it to public comment. Bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would yield the floor to staff if they had any specific comment they wanted to pick up on. I had a couple comments before that.
Sure. I'll respond to Eric Greening's comments. He was wanted some clarification on the Groundwater Advisory Committee versus the Steering Committee. Basically, the Groundwater Advisory Committee is everyone and anyone who wants to be involved in the Paso Basin issues. And then the steering committee is more of the focus group, those who want to meet on a monthly basis and talk about the issues. But anytime the steering committee meets, it would be also open to the public and be distributed to the entire groundwater advisory committee contact list. So it's kind of the difference there. There is a meeting on March 24th at 1:30 in the city of Paso Robles at their council chambers. And on the agenda is to talk about those at-large positions and also talk about an environmental at-large position within that steering committee group that could represent those interests. So they will be talking about that on March 24th. But it also brings to light the one of the other issues that's on the agenda is the formality of the group. Right now it's just a bunch of stakeholders getting together and trying to kind of emulating the Water Resources Advisory Committee in that, you know, the agencies are represented and then there's various at-large positions to represent rural areas, environmental groups, ag organizations. But there's, you know, a question as we move forward to the level of formality that we'll probably bring back to your board as we review the newer draft of the plan. I guess I just want to say that we are all in communication with the planning department as they develop the Shandon community plan. And then for Mr. Bunin's comment, supplemental water and pursuing that is one of many things on the list of potential actions to take to address the issues in the basin over time.
Great. Thank you. Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly do appreciate the efforts of staff and the public in working on this specific issue, and certainly will be happy to support a motion that I expect from one or the other of my North County colleagues. But I wanted to just make a couple general comments because we're on the horizon. We're going to see a lot more of these kinds of questions be brought before us. And I wonder, Courtney, if you can, if you have your PowerPoint, to roll back to the slide that shows the other plans and initiatives that are underway. And I've talked to Mr. Ogren a bit about this. I think it's really important both for the public and for us as policy setters and decision makers to understand the hierarchy of all these different plans and where this particular item that we're talking about today fits into a much larger picture. The Integrated Regional Water Management Plan may be the ultimate top level of that hierarchy, and I think it's going to be useful for us as we try to make progress to understand how the different pieces of these things fit together. Because I would note that what we're talking about today is a plan to take action, but we're not talking about specific actions at this point. And as we look around this county at the basins that are in trouble or approaching trouble, it's quite clear to me that we need to take actions, and we need to take action in a very complex regulatory environment. I would point out that we've got a couple of different ways to go. We can think of the, you know, fairly conventional top-down regulatory action. We know the pluses and minuses of that. We have voluntary actions that might be, and I'm sure will be, important contributors to that. But we need, in every case, both to understand who's responsible for these actions and who's responsible for monitoring the results of these actions, because the consequences here are going to be fairly serious. Potentially very serious. And so I just leave you with the thought that in getting this together, working on this piece is a great idea, but I would hope that at some point we might come forward with a little more global view of water management in this county. You know, I talked some time ago with Mr. Ogren about the thought that maybe we're ready for a countywide water summit, because we do have a lot of different agencies involved, a lot of special districts, a lot of state-level regulatory agencies, and a lot of different efforts going on within the county and the cities to take care of these things. And I think we need to understand the big picture and make sure we understand the forest even as we work on specific trees.
Thank you. Supervisor Meacham?
I'm just getting prepared to make a motion.
Please.
Okay. And I do have a lot of, but it's cautiously optimistic about where we're going with this. But just as a little reflection, it took 7 states about 50 years to come to an agreement with the Colorado River. And so here we're talking about a smaller area, but I don't think it's any less complex in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here. With that, I will go with staff's recommendation to approve a resolution of intention to develop a groundwater management plan for the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin.
And I'll second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill, if I make one quick comment to follow up.
Okay.
Mr. Gibson's comment, and maybe from staff, I do agree that, you know, you name a water issue, and we have it in San Luis Obispo County somewhere. And it was my hope when we started several years ago about talking about the master water plan for the county, that it would address many of the issues, if not all of the issues, that Supervisor Gibson raised. The complexity of our water resources, the master water plan is supposed to be an inventory of those. It's supposed to project our future needs here and then obviously raise the issues that we're facing and hopefully speak to how we may address those issues. So I'm hoping that the master water plan does that for us. And a quick question, it was released yesterday. Is that on the Public Works website now?
It is.
Great.
And I'm hopeful that it addresses all those issues. We tried to nail all of those. So we look forward to your review.
I might make a quick.
Okay.
Very quick.
after
this is just Mr. Greening, I said that you asked about the representation of the environmental community or the environmental community. They are well representative. It's called agriculture.
Okay. My understanding, Ms. Neal, is we have no closed session.
That's correct.
Woo!
How do you report out of a closed session?
So we will therefore adjourn until next Tuesday, at which time we will have a planning workshop on Tuesday. So see you then. Thank you.
Any questions?